living in a glass case of emotion.
Hey, welcome back to Cinema Sessions, the podcast where film fanatics who happen to also be therapists geek out about their favorite films, sharing therapeutic insights, character deep dives, and a healthy portion. Oh my God, so much non-clinical nonsense. My name is Rick Gutterson, and I am joined not by Kayla Tuttle today, who couldn't make it to record today with us, but I am joined by my wonderful friend, fellow Christmas movie entrepreneur. Oh my gosh, I need some coffee. Hey, it's Michael Davis. Are you?
Hey, everybody. It's not Kayla.
Are you a Christmas movie entrepreneur?
A Christmas movie savant?
Connoisseur is what I was trying to connoisseur. Say.
That's probably, yeah, another French word. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'll take them all.
What is a Christmas movie entrepreneur? Is that a...
like? That sounds like another Hallmark movie idea.
Ooh.
I mean, it's the guy is usually an entrepreneur, right? He's usually a businessman or something.
Yeah, but not about and Christmas. It's specifically about Christmas movies.
Yeah,
just right. Like, is that like selling them off on the street under your trench coat kind of thing?
Just selling off DVDs, yeah. Some bootlegs.
Bootlegs, is that what you've been doing these days, Michael? Selling bootleg copies of your favorite Christmas movies?
Listen, hard times in the Davis household, and gotta do what you gotta do, right? Holiday season.
I'm cloaked in failure.
It's been a hard times these last few months.
That one hits close to home.
Well, it's good to have you back on the show, Michael.
Thank you. It's great to be back. I obviously this is the first time just the two of us have recorded, so obviously we miss Kayla, but I am always thrilled whenever I get the call on the bat phone to come back down and
We need you.
That's right. As I say, I'm always down to clown with Rick and Kayla, so it's a blast to talk about movies we love and also bring kind of a therapeutic spin to it. So
it's
my pleasure. I have not heard that probably in months since the last time I was on here. So I will take it.
My goal is to create as much shame for you as possible throughout this next hour.
We're already at like a 1.5 out of 10.
Good. I'm working
climbing up the scale.
If I can get to a solid 7, I think we're in good shape.
We're well on our way.
Yeah. So we are covering one of my favorite Christmas movies of all time. Hopefully it's yours too at home. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. We're going to be covering quite a few different themes. We're going to have a lot of fun talking about just movie talk, the making of the movie, and just some of the funny moments of this film. We're also going to dive into some of the therapeutic themes, like just holiday stressors. We see so many of this in this film, even specifically looking at some of the family dynamics, and quite a few other themes, and also kind of diving into like how does Clark Griswold become who he is, and how can we help someone like a Clark? Because I think a lot of us have a Clark Griswold in our lives, or maybe hands raised, we are a Clark Griswold ourselves and have some Clark tendencies. We're going to talk about that as well. I want to encourage you to subscribe or follow this podcast on any of the platforms that you listen. Consider sharing it with your friends, especially it's Christmas time. We're all looking for some fun Christmas content. So I want to encourage you to share this episode with friends, coworkers, family, people that you think might have fun with it. And then we would love if you would review this podcast on Apple or Spotify specifically. That would help people find the show. Been hearing from some people that are just discovering the show from searches online, which is awesome. And so the way that happens more and more is by leaving reviews and subscribing and things like that. So thanks for doing that. And also you can follow us on Instagram. It's at Cinema Sessions Pod. You can follow us on Instagram, find little behind the scenes videos or video clips of this show as well. So really excited about that. So Michael, tell me, like, what is your relationship with National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation?
Yeah, so I'll just disclose, my parents love holiday movies. My dad is he's such a weird mix of things, but I will just say he loves Hallmark movies.
So he's
like the old school person that has a bunch on his DVR. He still has a DVR, still pays for cable, the whole thing.
Yes.
So we had growing up kind of a few movies on rotation. I think I've mentioned on this podcast before, like the 22 minute long, like How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
We used to watch every Christmas Eve. That's like one of my mom's favorite things. She just loves Dr. Seuss. And so like we used to watch that. We always watch White Christmas. Elf got in the rotation, It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. There wasn't as much. I'll just say this movie and its humor is probably like a little bit more, vulgar or like risque mm-hmm. than what my mom and dad, who are very Midwestern and are very polite and very Christian, are like looking for mm-hmm. usually. So
oh dear,
this movie.
Close your eyes, little Michael. Close your eyes.
Well, I was gonna say, because we had family who watched this movie, like cousins, but this movie was not in the rotation. I actually was introduced to it probably in high school. So I actually didn't watch it growing up. So I've seen this movie now. I just rewatched it. So probably somewhere between 7 and 10 times. But it's not like one of those movies that I've seen 100 times. You know?
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I came to it a little bit later. But I will say when I was introduced, I was like, I wish that my parents were cool and had watched this movie. Because this is hilarious.
Parents, sorry if you're listening. Michael's totally throwing you under the bus right
there
now.
Is 100% chance they are not listening, because I don't think they know how to do podcasts. It's okay. It's not fair. It's enough. Not us. It's them. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But anyway, yes, wonderful movie. And I, it now is something that I watch probably close to every year, like over the last number, probably 4 or 5 years. And I will say that just as life changes, sometimes you connect more and more to certain characters, you know? Mm-hmm. So I see more and more of myself in Clark, maybe in different ways, but
yeah. And that's, it's a good way to examine, you don't really think about this film as like a character case study, but it really is a story about Clark Griswold and all of his crazy shenanigans as he navigates the holidays with his family, which does lead to what we call my curious question.
Excuse me. I have a few more questions if you don't mind.
Michael, I pushed the right button. Aren't you proud of me?
We're one for one, baby.
Let's yes.
Go. Well, we're picking up first downs. We can make sports analogies because Kayla's not here.
Ha! No, I'm back, baby.
Let's go.
So this is a movie about Clark Griswold, right? So I wanted to ask you if you could take Clark Griswold, pluck him out of this Christmas movie, and insert that character into another Christmas movie as the lead character. What movie would you pick?
Oh, another Christmas movie. My mind started going to like I Am Legend or something, survival. Gosh,
I'm the only person on the earth, and I just keep fumbling up things. I can't even get this right by myself.
That's right. That's right. He's at the mall trying to find stuff.
That's like a really good pick. I would watch that movie so hard, like Clark Griswold.
Oh, if that came out, I'd be in the theaters opening weekend. Let's go. another Christmas movie. Well. Okay, so there are several that Clark would really change the vibe of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he were the lead in It's a Wonderful Life.
That's exactly what I went to.
Yeah, like it would be hilarious. I'm not sure it'd be quite as sentimental, right?
Yeah.
Honestly, it's possible that, Clark might be driven to that bridge scene. It could happen, right?
I'm picturing the scene where he snaps at his kids before taking off to the bridge, but putting Clark in there, and he gets the chainsaw out. He starts screaming, "Hallelujah! Where's the Tylenol?"
Well, and I was gonna say,
my God, what is that?
Yeah, in It's a Wonderful Life, there's the whole thing with George in the bank, and like in this one, it's like he's waiting for his bonus, from mm-hmm. his boss, and National Lampoon's
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Christmas Life. Yeah.
Instead of his partner being the one that loses the money, 100% guaranteed Clark is the one that loses the money.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And nobody comes to his aid at the end. Like, you buffoon.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one. I was going to say too, another fascinating one would be, I'm trying to think, I guess like Christmas with the Cranks has this a little bit, but kind of this like, or even, I'm blanking on titles, but like other things where it's a parent, like what if we went into the future and Clark's kids are grown up and it's like, he is the dad, like even in like Meet the Parents or something.
Mm.
Right. Which would just be hilarious, instead of the Robert De Niro character or like, I don't know. Like
what about Four Christmases? The father figure in Four Christmases.
There we go. There we go.
He's been divorced. He's got these crazy kids now and he's just like, super antisocial and just domineering. Like he's just this crotchety old man now.
Yeah. It could happen. Right?
I like it. I like the way It's a Wonderful Life pick. Although I like I Am Legend even better. I think that's a great answer. So Michael, I have a question for you. Normally I throw Kayla to do a simple synopsis of a movie that we're covering. Are you feeling up for that?
I think I could do
Give us a simple synopsis for those who haven't seen it before or haven't seen it in a while of National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Okay, so this movie follows Clark Griswold, who is a suburban family man. He is married and has two kids. He lives in the Chicago area, and this is around the holidays. And Clark is trying to get his Christmas bonus so that he can put a pool in his backyard. He is trying to put up the most elaborate Christmas decorations to keep up with their crazy neighbors. He is trying to impress in-laws. He is trying to impress everybody. And hilarity ensues when different family members come to town to stay with the Griswolds for Christmas. Their house is beautiful, by the way. And sublime house. And yeah, it's really about kind of Clark's relationship with his family members. And I think there are a lot of hijinks ensue because this is a comedy, but it ultimately is kind of about those themes of family, holidays, togetherness, what's most important, how do you respond when, you know, crap hits the fan.
Yeah. That's the only thing that's missing from this movie is someone actually having crap that hits a fan. It's out in the, it's out in the street. You got Cousin Eddie.
Well, I was going to say there is crap in the sewer.
Yeah.
And that blows, right?
But, oh man. We all need a Cousin Eddie. No, we maybe don't need a Cousin Eddie in our lives. That's just that's a struggle.
that character cracks me up every time now, like the more I see the movie.
It's so good.
Painfully so.
But, I forgot to grab it, but I have a Cousin Eddie Funko Pop. You know what's funny about it is he's got a cigar in his mouth and he's got a beer. And my son, who's four now, always asks about it. It's like, what's this? And so my wife said, it's a hot dog. So she thinks, Jackson thinks that Cousin Eddie's just chomping on hot dogs.
Eating a hot dog.
I was like,
that's hilarious. He has
no context for what a cigar is yet. We'll tell him eventually. But right now he's just thinking, Cousin Eddie really likes hot dogs.
That's right. That's amazing. I love it.
So I was pulling up some background information. I wanted to ask you about this. Do you know who directs this movie?
Oh, gosh. I feel like I saw this at some point. Isn't it John Hughes?
No, he wrote the movie.
Oh, he wrote it. Yeah. Okay.
I guarantee no one in the history of mankind knows who this director is. His name is Jeremiah Chechik.
Okay.
He's directed.
Not familiar with his filmography.
Nobody is. I pulled it. I don't have it in front of me now, but he's literally directed nothing other than
this
movie.
Movie he
and like a couple of TV shows, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's crazy.
I wonder what the story is there.
So I looked it up a little bit. So Hughes wrote it, and this came out in 1989, and he wanted Christopher Columbus to direct it. And he came on set, was ready to go, and Christopher Columbus, who...
The Harry Potter films.
Harry Potter films, exactly. Oh, yeah. my best friend. did the first two Harry Potter films, but he couldn't get along with Chevy Chase, or at least there's some differing information. But what I saw
online
is he was not a fan of working with him, so he quit. And then the next year, a massive Christmas movie came out called Home Alone, and Christopher Columbus directed that instead.
That's right. He did do Home Alone.
Mm-hmm. And that was also a John Hughes written project.
I was going to say, that kind of worked out for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
except for Jeremiah Chechik, who no one has ever heard of this man.
Well, that's true.
He's like, that's true. I mean, I've got a camera. I could direct something, I think.
Yeah, that's one of those, like, Mr. Nobody. Like, you know, everybody knows this movie. Or I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people know this movie. But, yeah, you know, Jeremiah Chechik sounds like a great guy. But, you know, probably nobody knows him from, you know, Santa Claus at this point.
He's an excellent baker. He loves Christmas cookies. I was looking it up. I'm like, who is this
good
director?
And
what has he made? I'm like, that's why I've never heard of him before. I can't remember what TV shows. It was like a couple of subtle things when it says like known for on IMDb. It's just this.
Right.
Usually there's four.
You know, we're in the Detroit area here. I mean, maybe it's just like a Barry Sanders thing, you know, just like, hit it big and then just retire off in the sunset before before people think you need to.
Yeah.
So it's just a one and done.
He's
like the guy in college.
Did you see the Barry Sanders documentary on Amazon? Amazon?
No, I haven't yet.
It's really,
I'm interested.
So nostalgic. For those who are outside of the Detroit market, Barry Sanders was like my childhood legend from a football standpoint. Like he started playing
Detroit when Lions, I started watching back, Detroit Lions.
They made an Amazon documentary about his career and his sudden retirement, and his sons are involved in some of the documentary stuff. And it's not the most powerful documentary you've ever seen, but it's a fun watch. Just wondering, how does this guy who's on top of the world about to break all these records suddenly drop out of the middle of nowhere? So it's good watch. It has nothing to do with this movie, of course, but it's a fun, fun side.
Usually thing. When you and I get together, movies and pop culture and sports and all the rest kind of get interwoven. So this is a nice look into what our conversations usually look like anyway.
Yeah. Soon we'll be talking about tax law and just random.
Yes.
It's just all relevant.
That's right. I have a lot of, you know, IRS facts over here.
Good show prep. Like, Rick's going to go here probably. I might as well just prepare. What does count as a write-off? Here's my question, right? So this movie has a ton of different moments and scenes, but instead of asking what your favorite scene is, when you think of the title National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, what image comes to your mind first?
I think it's the one that's on the box, which is the Christmas lights.
Mm-hmm.
Like him plugging it in and just that whole thing.
Yeah.
That is probably the quintessential image I think of first and foremost. There mm-hmm. are a couple others. Like, I particularly think about the mall scene that just, like, comes to mind when he's shopping for his wife.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No line, and, Russ, look.
Yeah, oh. Right.
You know, it's funny. So you mentioned when you first saw this movie, I'm 99% sure I'm remembering this correctly because this came out in 1989, so I was 9 years old. I remember going to this movie in the theaters with a friend of mine, a neighbor. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, and seeing that, and I was like watching that scene and going, this doesn't feel like my mom would be approving of.
What is this rated?
That's a good question. Is it PG-13? I think it's back then they just started introducing PG-13, I think, but I don't remember. That's a good question. Talk for a second. I'm just pulling it up on IMDb real quick.
Yeah, I'm curious myself. Yeah, I mean, this movie is one of those that I could see a lot of the marketing going to, like, this is a family comedy. This is rated PG-13.
Yeah, PG-13.
But yeah, I mean, because I was going to say, this is like a soft PG-13 now. Mm-hmm. But by 1989 standards, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if this was like scandalous, but it was probably, in terms of a family movie, mm-hmm. I don't know if there are many more films that kind of incorporate more of that I'll say just more typical guy humor, you know, like a little bit of that.
Well, it's interesting too, because I think it's been a while since I've watched European Vacation. I can't remember the last time I watched it. I recently rewatched the original Vacation movie. I think it's actually tamer than the original Vacation movie. Yeah. And then Vegas Vacation, I think, is the tamest of the four that came out. Was that the 90s that movie came out?
Okay. I've actually never seen any of the other ones.
Oh, really? So they're like, just classic.
This is the only one I've seen.
The one I'm least familiar with off the top of my head is the European Vacation. But so National Lampoon's Vacation, it's definitely dated and some of the humor is definitely offensive now. But it's them trying to get across the country on a road trip. And they're trying to go to this place called Wally World. And it's just this stuff that happens in that movie is absolutely insanity. Let me give a little spoiler warning for a 40-year-old movie.
Hey, come on. I haven't seen it yet. It doesn't have anything to do with the plot. Still, I like to go in fresh.
Oh my gosh,
what a bite. That's so good. That's like perfect for anything spoiler.
I was watching Seinfeld one day, and that was in the middle of a dinner scene. And I was like, oh, I need to grab that.
So good.
So there's one scene where like the grandma that they're going with, or the aunt, I forget what it is, she just dies. At one point, they like accidentally leave the dog leashed to the bumper of the car, and the police pulls him over and sees like the leash and like wants to arrest him. It's just absolute chaos. So the chaos that happens to Clark Griswold in this film is tame compared to some of the stuff that happens in the original. It's absolutely but Cousin Eddie's in there. He's the big running joke with these movies is they swap out the kids every single film, so it's never this, it's the same
kid, different actors,
same characters, but different actors on purpose. So
interesting.
Anthony Michael Hall is the son in the very first one from like Breakfast Club.
Wow.
He plays Russ in the very first film.
I was gonna say that's like such a different vibe than this kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, this kid's got a little bit more backbone to him, a little bit more spunk.
Yeah, isn't he the one? Dad. I never watched this show, but isn't he the one? Didn't he go on to what's the TV show that was huge?
Big Bang Theory?
Yeah, he went on to do that. I think.
Yeah, he not Sheldon, but the other guy.
Yeah, in that
show. And
the
girl.
All of a sudden, I'm drawing a blank in my brain. Julia Kaylee. Lewis. What does she go on?
No. To? Oh, Julia Louis Dreyfus.
Yeah. No.
I mean, she was in Seinfeld.
Not her. The daughter. So she's in.
Oh, okay. The daughter. Oh, what was she in?
Natural Born Killers. I don't even know if I've ever seen that. That came out in 94.
I love it.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
Okay.
Wow. Okay.
I don't remember her like a ton, but I believe you that she was in other stuff.
Apparently, she was a huge hit in these 90s movies, though, after this film.
hey, I mean, this is a really a springboard into a lot else, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned the lights is kind of like the iconic visual. What are some other iconic visuals that come to you in mind? I'll share one for me. It's I think for me it's definitely the lights. I think it's almost impossible to not picture Cousin Eddie in the streets. You know, just like poor.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I think is the craziness with after he's like snapped, when he pulls out the chainsaw and the hockey mask.
Yes.
And he's
yes.
just like at his wit's end. That yep. kind of like, you know, kind of homage to the Friday the 13th movies, even though he doesn't have a chainsaw in those movies. I think that's a fun visual as well.
That's a great one. I was going to say too, the once, is it the uncle who has the cigarette? And then the Christmas tree just like incinerates, right? It's just like
yes.
so, you know, like barren and ashy, and just like, you know, they had this huge tree, and like that's another just incredible visual gag, you know. And you see it, you know it's coming every time you watch it now, and it's just like, oh man, like yeah.
You know what's funny? One of my low key favorite like comedic moments of this movie is when they're getting ready to say the prayer, and she's like, Grace, she's been dead for 30 years. And Uncle's like, the blessing.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes, so good.
The way he like gestures and makes his mouth, he's got that horrible toupee on his head.
Talking out of the corner of his mouth,
the
too.
The blessing. Yeah. Oh, so good. That's one of my favorite images. You know what's weird, though? It's like there's a sentimental moment in this movie that I really love. It's when he's trapped up in the attic.
Oh, yeah. So that, good. And he's watching the film.
Yeah, that scene hits harder now to me. Just like,
oh, yeah.
The family memories, how I just love sitting, especially during the holidays, looking at photos and videos and, you know, shedding some tears and remembering my mom. And like, just that scene, like, you know, so let me share a personal story for a second here. So in 2016, I remember it was a couple years after my mom had died. And I was in grad school and working. I was just so stressed. And it was like this weird situation where I'm like, I'm so busy that I'm not enjoying Christmas as much, and I couldn't figure out why. And I realized like it's just because it's so busy. And I remember turning on this movie and listening to the song. It's a Ray Charles song that he's playing, which I think oddly enough you can't get on Spotify. You can get other versions of it, but they must not have like the licensing agreement for it or something. But
interesting. Yeah.
It's a beautiful song. But I remember watching this and having this like aha moment of like, in the midst of his chaos and his busyness, he's forced to slow down. And he chooses to feel in that moment and let all those feelings come down. So I think it was either Christmas Eve or the day before. I finally was off school and off work. So I lit a candle, put on some Christmas music. I put on that song specifically. And I just like slowed down, and all these tears just started coming. And like, in addition to crying, then I was like, all of a sudden, like the spirit of Christmas was like alive again for me, because I was so busy. I learned this really powerful lesson of like, you can't just suppress some feelings. If you if you stay busy and you suppress sadness, you also are going to have a difficult experience feeling like joy and peace and love, because you've chosen not to feel sadness. And so in the midst of the busyness, I had to really hit the pause button and like embrace the feeling of Christmas. And in doing that in a kind of multi-sensory way with the candles and the music and wrapping the paper, just fully immerse myself. And I ended up having a really special Christmas that year, but it was kind of inspired by this attic scene of this movie of all things.
Yeah, and you're so right too. You don't get to pick and choose, right? It's like the hose, right? You like you cut off the water line, and yeah, like nothing's coming out. Then you're, like you could bludgeon other things that are significant just by trying to hold off or reserve or, you know, not feel or 100%. No, and honestly too, you know what else this movie reminded me of? Such a weird movie association, but have you seen Interstellar?
Oh yeah.
Okay, the McConaughey scene where this is a movie where he goes up into space. Anyway, he's like away from his kids for a long time, and he is watching. There's like a whole montage of him watching kind of these like family videos and just thinking back to his kids who he's missing because he's up in space. Again, weird shout, but it's like Matthew McConaughey. It's the meme of him crying or, you know, the GIF, and like that it reminded me a little bit of that. I was trying to think of other things where like somebody is literally in the movie watching a movie essentially, or like watching, you know, video footage of that. And, you know, kind of this nostalgia for family, kids, all that. And this one hits very differently than the Interstellar scene, which is like definitely more dramatic. And I'll say poignant in terms of really eliciting that kind of sadness and pain and the ache of that. This one's really heartfelt.
Yes. Yeah. Would Interstellar be different if he was wearing a weird faux, like mink and some gloves and a little like shower cap? with that move, with that scene with
Maggie. The shower cap kills me. The shower cap is so good. Yes, I think it would change the scene.
I'm probably.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. All right, let me ask you this question here. So, if you were starting a new family Christmas tradition, and you could only pick something from this movie, which would you pick? And I've got a list here for you.
Okay.
And these, you have to pick one.
Yep. Gotcha.
The first one is this: falling off your roof. Okay.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that one hits a little close to home. I can explain.
Oh, okay.
Wait. Not for me.
Oh, not for Hannah, right?
My not for my wife.
Get up on the roof and put up some lights,
my
Hannah.
My dad, we call him Carl the Christmas Elf. He just, like, loves decorations. He's the one who buys, like, real garland and, like, will do it. And, like, the big red bows and the wreaths outside and all that. It's not nearly, you know, Clark Griswold, like, staple gun lights to the roof. But it is something else. Anyway, he fell like a few years ago doing this. Wow. And we've always been like, hey, Dad, you maybe should stop like getting up on tall ladders and stuff like that, because you're retired and, you know, just do some easier stuff. Anyway, so there ended up being, he was fine. You know, it was a slight, you know, hospital visit, but we're all good now. Anyway, so that's, I don't think I'll be choosing.
Okay, so we're going to skip that one. Okay, you got three to choose from here. Number two, chasing a squirrel throughout your house. The ceremonial Christmas squirrel.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Okay. Yep.
Okay. So you don't seem enamored with either of these first two choices. Let's go with this third one here. Kidnapping your boss. Annual Christmas celebration.
Can I solicit the help of somebody like a Cousin Eddie to
Absolutely.
Go?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The fourth one is probably the most mild, but, you know, temperature is a big variable. Singing the Pledge of Allegiance outside in the snow.
Oh, yeah. Wait, no, isn't that the Christmas dinner? No, aren't she, well, she trying says to do the blessing?
She that and then, blessing. And then don't,
but don't they do the Pledge of Allegiance at the table?
Yeah. So, I'm sorry. So she does the Pledge of Allegiance at the table. Then she sings "Star Spangled Banner" outside.
Yeah, Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah.
Star Spangled Banner. Okay. that's right. That is also hilarious. Boy, oh boy.
One Christmas tradition for you. You've got this wonderful wife. You're trying to grow. Yeah. You're growing your family, and now. You've got to pick one of these. Which one are you picking?
I feel like the least traumatizing of those options, and maybe it's just the easy one, is I think singing the Star Spangled Banner.
Is at least the safest.
Not Star Spangled Banner. Not the Pledge of Allegiance or whatever the other one
was. Yeah, Star Spangled Banner.
Star Spangled Banner, thank you. Yeah, out in the snow. Yeah.
Do you involve the neighbors? Like, how do you deal with that? Do you just say, hey guys, I just need to do this for a moment, excuse me? Or do you like, hey, let's just all do this together?
I might just kind of start it, kind of like the wave, and just see if other people join in, you know?
So
kind of like a non-verbal cues, just kind of eye contact and, you know. We've got some neighbors that would be like, what in the actual heck? And other neighbors would just probably keep going about their day and, you know, but yeah. We live on a corner, so we actually don't have neighbors like across the street. Long story.
Okay.
But like the neighbors around, just knowing them, I imagine would be like, I didn't know that they were that couple, you know? Like, but anyway, yeah, so it would be funny.
It does, you know, a subtle part of that scene is you do have to launch a reindeer through the sky to like kind of do an ET moment across the moon.
Yes. Yes.
You know, you might get a couple violations from the police around the neighborhood, but, you know. It's safer.
It might be kind of fun. It's a little bit like, you know, sparklers at 4th of July or something, you know, or Juneteenth, you know, like the doing your, I don't know. Could be kind of fun. I think the fan might be behind it. My wife definitely loves pyrotechnics.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
I like this. I like this visual. Let her know, like, you learned something that you really want to apply to your family during this recording. Let her know it was inspired, that it was fully your idea, not mine.
Right. Rick just got out of me that I want to be outside setting off explosives and singing patriotic together. Can we do that this Christmas?
Pure romance.
That's right.
All right. One more real, I got a couple more specific questions for you. What event in your life do you feel like you need to dress like Cousin Eddie with that faux turtleneck? What events do you feel like would be enhanced if you showed up wearing a white sweater with a black faux turtleneck underneath that you can clearly see the outline for?
Like what event from my past?
Could past, I go back present, future? I mean, you know,
could I go back to my wedding?
Yes.
Rock that bad boy.
Honey, just doing your vows. And she's like, I want to make eye contact with you, but I see the outline of your black turtleneck. Could you at least own a real turtleneck at this wedding?
What's hilarious is actually as a kid, I had a thing where I just hated turtlenecks, both the look, because I just thought they looked really dorky. And also I just hated the feel of like something on my neck. Like, mm-hmm. I think it just elicited some kind, like, I feel like I was like choking or being smothered or something. And listen, when you're a kid and you have to wear a school uniform because I went to a private school, the turtleneck was just not a good look for anybody. It doesn't make you look like it's not like, oh man, really elongating your neck. You look great. It's like, you look like a giraffe in like a green turtleneck. You look absurd.
There's nothing.
Why did you put your 8-year-old in this? You know?
Like, there's nothing to like elicit an anxiety response like putting like tightly made clothing around a child's neck.
Yeah. I don't get it. I don't get it. Listen, if you're a turtleneck fan out there, I respect you. I see you. I'm just like, hey, why don't we do scarves? And then we can like detach them, right?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Oh, it's so
or maybe
good.
If they had turtlenecks, sort of like they have the tearaway pants, right? You could like tear it away. Maybe?
You got me. Oh my gosh. Almost needed to call paramedic there for a second. Oh my gosh. A tearaway turtleneck.
We both have our Yetis here.
My neck is free. I don't want to cause anybody to stumble, but I've got 3 inches of skin below my chin that's now accessible to your eyes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. My.
Well, living in Michigan, too, that puppy doesn't see the sun for very long.
Yeah.
So,
tan lines.
It's pale.
Yeah. Oh, right. That's amazing. Oh, gosh. All right. So last question before we jump into therapeutic.
Now our viewers have a new visual that they can picture as they listen to us.
They have new tools. Like, hey, maybe you don't like your neck. Maybe you're uncomfortable with this, but you don't want the permanency of a faux turtleneck. If you can get a tearaway one like the 90s athletic pants, like, look, this bad boy is too hot, but I don't feel like taking out the outer.
Versatility and choices. That's what I want.
This is going to enhance your social life. It's going to enhance your professional life. We can go to market with this. Do you have any sewing skills or any connections to some good fabric makers?
My wife actually knows how to sew. Yeah, she's like fixed up a couple like pants of mine and stuff like that have ripped.
She probably didn't know she was going to get some homework after this episode. But so we've got to do pyrotechnics in the yard.
Guess what? Yeah.
And now she needs to make some clothing.
Honey, you're going to love it. Me and Rick have decided on what you're going to be doing for the next while.
Just slide this. Yeah. Like, hey, I want you to listen to this episode real quick and just let me know what you think.
Yeah, right.
Just like this.
Just trying to solicit some feedback here.
Yeah, yeah. How'd you think I did? Oh, by the way, what'd you think about our ideas?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. Well, so this is a good segue to the last question before the therapy themes.
Yes.
What Clark Griswold-like tendencies do you have as a person?
Oh, man. I feel like I am a consummate people pleaser.
Mm.
So kind of this like, or trying to like measure up to like, mm-hmm. people's expectations. There is definitely some of that. That's what I talked to my therapist about. So that's definitely one of them. And then I was going to say too, I think there is something in Clark that I would say I also share, maybe in a slightly different way, but you really care about family and holidays and doing this stuff well, right? And not just kind of like phoning it in. So I think there is a sense of like, oh, I really, if I'm going to do this, I really want to do it well. And not necessarily that has to be like the biggest tree and like we have to do, have to buy my wife the most expensive thing at the store or what, but I do think there's a sense of, wanting to be excellent at stuff, particularly on like I care about my job and things too, but mm-hmm. I really care about doing things well for my wife and our home and our family. And yeah, so I can relate to that a lot.
That's good. I was concerned that you're going to pick, I pre-bought an expensive pool before I ever got the money in hand and just hoped that I would get
I'm selling off a kidney to help pay for the pool going in the back. Yeah.
I was thinking about that same thing. Like what, other than I'm kind of clumsy. So I relate with that aspect of him. And, but I just thought about like the tendency, like he does not ask for help in anything.
Oh gosh.
And when you combine that with his clumsiness or his kind of, it's not super handy. It gets him a lot of trouble. Now I do ask for helps in areas that I'm not good at, but when I get more and more stressed, I tend to double down and trying to figure it out because I want to prove it to myself.
Yeah.
Where you see 100%. That in him, where it's like, okay, yeah, I don't want help because then I have to admit that I failed or that I messed up. And then as he gets more and more stressed, he makes more and more mistakes. And it's just this vicious cycle. I'm like, I don't like that, but I think I see that in myself as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny that kind of thing of like, I'm gonna white knuckle and just like make it work instead of, asking for help, taking a break, you know, reevaluating, whatever, getting something that you need. Yeah, it's usually just like, I'm gonna bear down here and like get this done.
Yeah. Which that's a good segue into like our therapeutic themes, though, because I think the big thing that you see in this film that is kind of a higher kind of an umbrella for other types of themes that you and I mentioned before we started recording is just the way that we experience stress during the holidays. There's so much stress that he's experiencing, the family's experiencing. Unfortunately, a lot of the stressors are self-induced in his case. Yes. What are some of the stresses that you see in this movie that that stand out to you and also might be stresses that the average person experiences as well? Maybe not in the exact same comedic form, but that we all can kind of relate with.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, so a couple different things. So I first ones that just come to mind are, so there's the kind of family relational stress, right? Mm-hmm. So, oh, we want to do something special. So, oh, we want to have, you know, a Griswold family Christmas, right? That's what he keeps saying in the movie. So it's like they have both sets of grandparents, like his parents, Clark's and his wife's, staying at the house with them. Cousin Eddie and his wife and kids show up, right? so it's like, oh, like the whole gang is here, you know? So I think there's a lot of, I think stress around particularly significant moments. So I think things like, you know, holidays, birthdays, you know, anniversaries, like these big times, people end up like really trying hard to kind of like, okay, I want to show up, you know, I want to do well at this. So I think there's a lot with family. And then I think there's a lot with kind of, like I said, those kind of special occasions, holidays. I think that can create just a lot of extra stress. And I think so often we can add a lot of layers of expectation and kind of like, I always like to parse it out is like, what is a desire here and what's a need? You know, it's like, do we need to have the nicest, you know, Christmas light set like in the whole neighborhood? Probably not.
Right.
Is it a desire though to try to like look great and, you know, and feel good about yourself and please mom or dad or, you know, like my in-laws who are, you know, really stubborn or whatever, for me to finally get this right? Yeah, totally. I mean, that's speaking to kind of a valid need, but I do think there's a lot in that, both for family and then traditions. And then I think too, like the finances. I mean, I think that's a real thing, kind of end of the year, especially with Christmas and New Year's coming up. You know, he's waiting for this holiday bonus. I've been trying to work hard all year so we can put in this pool. I do not recommend buying the $7,500 pool in 1989, which like I don't know about inflation.
$10 million,
probably
roughly.
Far more than that. Yeah. A nice in-ground pool in the back. You know, it's again kind of this like desire to, and I think this can kind of be a suburban thing too, to kind of have it all, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, we want to have the nice stuff and, you know, buy this and that. And I think there can be a lot of pressure there for people to kind of, okay, like, end of the year, I want to do something nice, but also depending on the year we've had, is that feasible? And what does that say about us if we can't get the pool, if I can't get my wife a nice piece of jewelry, if I can't, you know, get the new appliance or, you know, shop the Black Friday deals or, right, you know, whatever the thing might be. I think there can be a lot of that kind of societal pressure and then kind of pressure we put on ourselves and depending on the family we're in, depending on the kind of circles you roll in. I think all of those add layers that just make holidays kind of inherently loaded and, you know, potentially very stressful.
Yeah. You know, there's two stressors, two financial stressors I see, because the obvious one is the, you know, the Clark and pre-spending the money and then hoping it shows up and, you know, all that stuff. But then there's other scene. It's a kind of a smaller scene, but like he's talking to Cousin Eddie's daughter and like realizes like, oh, we didn't have Christmas last year. And so even though it's a stressor of Eddie's and their families, like you see the burden that he feels, like I feel responsible to make sure that my niece or, you know, second cousin or whatever,
kids,
have a good Christmas. And so he takes, you know, the family out shopping and he's buying those massive you know, bags of dog food and all this crazy stuff. And but you just see that burden of like, you know, and we, this is a stress that a lot of people can relate with too. Like, man, I don't want my family members to go without, or I don't want other people to go without. And so we'll donate to causes. We'll do Toys for Tots. We'll do all these other things, these really good causes. But it also can create financial stress because Clark is in a financial struggle himself. Like, he has a good paying job and nice home, but kind of made some bad spending decisions on pre-spending for this pool. Doesn't have the money. He's afraid of that, and also still feels bad. And so starts spending money he doesn't have to try to help out other family members. Man, when that bill comes in January, I can create a lot of challenges on top of the stress that they're already carrying from the holiday season.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think there is kind of this implicit thing of like people, like even with giving gifts, like you are, like your value is conveyed in how much I spend almost, right? So like, oh, I want to buy the biggest and best, you know? And I don't know, like I was talking to a client of mine. This is a true story. Recently, and he, like, the biggest thing he wanted on his, I mean, this is like an elementary school student, and the biggest thing he wanted was like a VR headset. And I don't know how much of those go for, but I don't think they're cheap.
Yeah, I say those seems like they're pushing $1,000 maybe. I
right,
I don't have
that's
one,
what but. I was gonna say. Yeah, and I was thinking, like, I don't think he has any grasp on like how expensive that is and how few people actually have one of those. I mean, I don't know, but you know, it's not like, hey, yeah, I want the new like Super Soaker or something. I don't know.
Super Soaker. Super Soaker. Oh, man, we're going back to the 80s just like this movie again. I loved those in the 80s.
I love the they Super still Soakers. Have them? I hope so. Oh. I don't know. That's I don't know.
Glorious maybe COVID, part of my childhood.
Maybe COVID killed Super Soakers because kids didn't want to play outside anymore. I don't know. Well, I hope not.
I'm sure there was other factors potentially in the death of the Super Soaker.
True.
If I had to list them out, like maybe market research or shifting needs versus the pandemic, but who knows?
I don't know either.
If you had that on our the Cinema Sessions bingo card, things, childhood toys in the 80s that the pandemic killed.
Hey, well, I'm a child of the 90s, off. And I still played with them too. So they honestly, they had a pretty long shelf life.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, too bad they died in 2020, apparently. Hey, so here's a question for you. What one of the big things that you see Clark driven by is this need to have the perfect Christmas.
Yes.
What, you know, and that creates so much stress. Like there's that the phrase like the keeping up the Joneses and stuff, but also like internally, like I want to make the best Christmas possible. And you see throughout this film, like how much stress that creates for him, like in the lights and the meal and like that horrible turkey. What a disgusting image. That's probably another visual.
Oh my gosh, when it iconic like one. Opens down the middle. Yeah. Just
disgusting. You know what it kind of reminds me
and
of?
Honestly, it's like a Dr. Seuss thing.
Yes.
Like, you know, oh, they burned the roast beast or something. Like, I don't know. Like, it, you know, it just opens down the middle. It's got that terrible, like, I don't even. Yeah.
And you know what it reminds me is a visual of, like, the Independence Day movie when they're doing the autopsy on the alien head pops out.
Yeah.
Just fully expecting, like, an alien head to pop out of that gross turkey as he carves it open.
It's got that like steam that like comes out. It's almost like in Star Wars or like the Millennium Falcon like lands or something and like all the steam. I don't know.
It's just, so disgusting.
Yeah, it's foul.
Oh my gosh. Want. So why is something like that such a temptation? Like to try to like really will into existence the perfect Christmas to the point where it creates so much dysfunction in his family and so much stress for him. Where do you think that comes from?
Yeah, I think a lot of it stems from what we value. And I think, you know, so many of us, you know, strip down, okay, you know, I got the house, the job, the car, whatever. It's like, who are you though, right? Like, what's important to you? Who are you as a person? Not in terms of the roles you fulfill, the stuff you have, the things you do. Who are you? What's important to you, right? Like, if you really ask people what's important to the holidays, it becomes this checklist of things we have to do, right? And, oh, I have to, like, you know, please this person and do this. And I have to look impressive and I have to keep it all together and I have to be perfect because that's the expectation is that we all have to be perfect or else. Right. And it's like, well, so it seems like, you know, there's a really high bar on a lot of these things. What would happen if, hey, instead of the, you know, $1,000 VR headset, you got a $200 gift that's more feasible in your budget right now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I wouldn't feel like I'm as good of a guy, or, you know, like, my wife can't have nice things, or, you know, like, where, what is that getting at? What is the insecurity there? What is the problem that often I think those things mask and we kind of cover up for, or we're trying to compensate maybe for something, right?
Yeah.
You know, going on the nicest vacations and doing this and that. And it's like, you know, but then you've got other people that, you know, holiday time is about being around family and just being together. Right.
You know what I'm thinking about as you're sharing that? Like, I think there's some clues in this movie. You know, the scene from the attic and how emotional he gets. In his head, there's probably some perfect image of Christmas that he's trying to recapture this feeling of his childhood.
Yes.
And so then he's trying to will it into existence, but he's just not wired the same way. And so as a result, he's just creating more and more problems. Like, if I'm forgetful, it's going to be really hard to go to pick out the perfect Christmas tree if I don't have the saw.
Yes.
Right. And so now I've got to dig it up at the roots, tie it to my, you know, to my station wagon, and it's way too big. And now I'm creating all this other stress with the sap and the squirrels, and versus like, what if I just settled for, you know, like a, you know, a reusable one or a cheaper tree or more, you know, more affordable, whatever, and just enjoy the time with my family versus feeling like my family will love me more and I can recreate the feelings of my childhood if I get the perfect tree.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where I feel like there's this narrative that's running through his head of like, I am what I do. And, you know, my worth comes from what I do. And then when you combine that with like, I'm missing something from my childhood that I'm trying to recreate, it can just be this recipe for disaster, which ends up being most of this movie.
Yeah.
Hallelujah. Yeah.
What I was going to say too, the nostalgia piece of that, right? Nostalgia has this like positive connotation. It's not like, hey, yeah, I'm nostalgic for that time that was really miserable, right? It's usually something that's really positive. So, you know, evoking these things and having holiday traditions and looking back on these times that were really positive, and he wants this perfect family thing. And there's that telling scene where he talks to Dad and he's like, how did you do it? And Dad's like, you know, the grandpa to the kids is like, yeah, like, I can't remember what he says, but he's kind of like something like, either it wasn't perfect or I don't know how we did it or whatever, you know. And it's kind of just like, Clark remembers it as this like positive thing, but it wasn't perfect. Nothing's perfect, right? But he had such high hopes and expectations, and, you know, so much is loaded into this holiday and this time together, which is a beautiful thing that he has that memory and that's good for him. But it's not about being perfect. It's not about having like the nicest tree and the decorations and the family and the gifts and like the dinner times are perfectly. It's like, what is that actually about, you know, for you? Is it about being together? Is it about, hey, like, we've been through a lot this year, and yet, like, here we still are, or we can get through tough things together, whatever the thing might be. I mean, that is, I think, such a temptation, is I am what I do, and things have to be perfect or else, right? What does that say about me?
Right.
Oh, I'm a bad dad. Yeah. Oh, I'm not a responsible father. Oh, I can't care for my wife.
Yeah.
I'm not trustworthy. Right. All these kinds of things that are really insidious. And we start to think about, and so kind of out of sight, out of mind, we end up, you know, trying to get those out by having the perfect Christmas. Well, if I have a perfect Christmas, then everything's good. Look at my family. Look at the Christmas card. Look at the beautiful vacation we went on. Look at all this stuff. And it's like, that's not indicative of like heart level stuff of contentment and satisfaction and
peace.
Yeah. Peace and being together. Joy. And connection.
Yeah.
Right. La, 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 la. I was thinking of, so in my family, we have, sometimes there is a lot of expectations surrounding like family meals and just like a lot of work that goes into it. And I always think of, A Christmas Story, right? Where at the end, everything goes to hell. And they end up going out to the Chinese restaurant. Right? Like, and they're eating the duck.
And they chop the duck's head off.
And
traumatize the children.
Right, exactly. But also, it's like, who cares? Like, they got, you know, the equivalent of Chinese takeout. But they're together, right? It's like, is the important thing the food we eat and, like, all the stuff and all the fixings? Or is it that we're together and we're doing it together, right? Like, yeah, you want to be special, so but you're probably not going to get McDonald's for Christmas. But if that's your tradition and that's what you enjoy because it's less stressful and you can all be together, heck yeah, do that, right?
Yeah.
I think sometimes people get locked into this, like, you know, why is it that way? It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be, you know, this crazy dinner that you prep for, you know, 3 days before and you're spending $1,000 on. It doesn't have to be that way. Yeah. You can have something special without it being all the time, all the effort, all the money, right? Like, where is the significance coming from? Mm-hmm. You know? And I think that's an important thing that we need to parse out, both for ourselves and for our clients and just for people in general, right?
Yeah.
What is the important thing surrounding this holiday? What does this mean to me? And where does this, you know, significance come from?
Yeah. So can I ask you a couple personal questions?
Absolutely.
So watching this movie, it's a very father-centric movie. And growing up, you watch it as a kid, you watch it through the ends of, like, your own father, right?
Yes.
I know that now, as a father, for me, I watch movies very differently, because now I'm identifying with, man, I am Clark in this movie, right? So
yeah.
You shared off air, and if you wouldn't mind sharing on the recording, you mentioned that we could. You've got a big change coming up with you and your family, right?
Yes, my wife and I are pregnant. My wife is pregnant. I always say that wrong.
Explain the details. I'm confused.
Yeah, it's a weird alien situation. Both are. Yeah, it's just picture Ridley Scott. It's gonna be it's gonna be great. We're expecting a baby girl in March.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, we're really excited, but for sure, like, it's a big time of changes, and we're recording this in early December. You know, this is kind of the last holiday, like, before our daughter is born and before, you know, we're a family of three. I mean, obviously, yeah, you know, just my wife and I, navigating that. And,
yeah.
And anyway, so yes, big things will be changing. So you're right in terms of, you start to view this movie differently when it's like, oh, haha, this is a funny, like, fatherly character. And then you're like, oh my gosh, like, that could be me in 10 years or something, or like tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
If I'm not careful about my values and priorities. And my wife, it's so funny. My wife sometimes hates driving with me. We have very different driving styles. I don't know if there are any couples out there who can relate to this, but when I see that first yes. scene, oh my gosh. And he's underneath the truck. And I'm like, that would between, you know, me and my wife, and, you know, the wife is like, slow down, Clark. Like, da, 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 da. And anyway, that
are
one
you,
gets close to
are
home.
You a Clark Griswold road rage person? Clumsy road
no,
rage?
No, but I have some things I'm working on, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. I have problems.
100%. Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, I'm curious to see, like, you know, these next couple of years, how your viewing of this movie and some other Christmas movies starts to change. And also, like, looking at, like, the stressors that we put on ourselves to try to give our kids the perfect Christmas. Because it is your identity, but some of it is, like, watching them delight, you know, the first Christmas when, you know, like, so next year your daughter won't be quite a year old yet, but so they won't quite understand. But like the next year when they're kind of coherent and like understanding some of this stuff and can actually verbalize or at least kind of like see from their face, like they're understanding it. Like we put all this extra pressure on ourselves. Like I would tell you, like, you know, the way we put up the Christmas tree, we put up our tree the weekend before this recording. And, you know, my son just was like in awe of it. And it was so fun to like watch all this stuff, but you feel like you have to put out this pressure of like, okay, so here's our budget for Christmas, but what if we also got this thing? What if we also did this thing? And you see how it can quickly snowball, even though we're aware of these tendencies because of the joy that we know that it creates. But then we also have to like balance it out with like, what is the stressor and is that worth that stress? And is this going to create unnecessary or an additional stress to our family long term that will kind of take away from that moment of like, yay, they had some fun. And then the toy ends up in the pile in the back and you step on it and break it the next day. And like, well, there went $20 I didn't need to spend, you know?
Yeah.
So obviously you haven't experienced that part yet, but I'm curious to see, we'll have to do a Michael check-in in future Christmases.
Yeah.
Like, how's that going?
Yeah.
But I wanted to see if you saw this movie differently through that lens now that your family is growing.
For sure. Well, and I'm already a people pleaser. So it's funny because I can see, even in just you describing that, and I'm not the person that necessarily, like, gift giving is not one of my top love languages. I'd rather give a gift than receive one, but it's like pretty low down on my list. But I do want people to feel valued and special. And so I think in that, and wanting to please people, and I think there can be, I'm sure there will be that pressure to, oh my gosh, we got to have the thing. We got to, you know, set this up. We got to have the greatest traditions. And, you know, that's where, again, it's good to kind of, you know, if you don't have good boundaries with this stuff of like, what am I willing to do? What am I not willing to do? You know, I know Kayla's always like harping on boundaries, right? When she's on mm-hmm. here, but I think boundaries are a big deal because, right? Like, for instance, with finances, hey, like, what am I willing to spend? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I can't buy the like $500 tree, you know, mm-hmm. Or whatever the thing might be, or this, you know, electronic thing. My yeah. wife and I, for Black Friday, true disclosure, we just bought a, gosh, what are they called? It's like the big fridge that like goes in the basement.
Okay.
That it, anyway, I'm like blanking on the term for this, but it's like such an adult
fridge.
What? It's a fridge, but it's like a storage freezer. Sorry.
Oh yeah. Like yeah. So like you've loaded up with the meats and all the different yeah, things that you want to keep. Yeah.
We bought one of those and
you've arrived like, in life. If you purchase one of those, like you have arrived yeah. as a father, as a husband, like this is the pinnacle of,
I'm
of
here.
Family life.
That's right. Like this is honestly the, this is Mount Rushmore for me. I don't know if I can top this. Yeah, exactly. It's all downhill from here. No, but it,
did
it,
you mean Mount Everest funny. Or did you, are you planning on carving four faces into a mountain somewhere? The four faces of fatherhood.
I just really care about Abe Lincoln. Yeah. I'm actually really nostalgic for presidents.
I'm going to climb up to the pinnacle of life. Mount Rushmore.
That's right. Yeah.
I love it. I'm going to use that's that right. now.
Hey, I, already here, you could tell how, you know, I have very high standards and I often meet them. So
you climb to the top and there's just four faces staring at you like just guilt ridden.
That's right. Which Roosevelt is that? No. Yeah. I mean, it's yeah. So anyway, no. I think this movie, I think that allows Clark to feel like a more sympathetic character to me because mm-hmm. it's like, oh, like even though this movie is ridiculous and it's played for laughs and, you know, it's just absurd, there are things that are really real. You know, when we talk about trying to like, you know, have the perfect Christmas, you know, all these kinds of things, different things with people pleasing, with, you know, doing the best you can, keeping up with the Joneses. It's like, that's real life that, I mean, a lot of people deal with, mm-hmm. you know, I bet north of 50% of people, even if you're not a father and it's not holidays or whatever, like there is something in this movie that you can probably connect to.
Yeah.
Either with that character or somebody else. Right.
Yeah, it's funny. There's not, there's other, I think Christmas movies that I find funnier. But this yeah. one, I don't know. It's like that hybrid of like combining like, you know, A Christmas Story, which it's okay for me. I like, but combining that with like Elf, which does get genuine laughs for me. Yeah. This it brings like the heart and the laughter together, which is one of the reasons I think it's so funny. So here's what I wanted to talk to you about. So we all either can identify with a Clark Griswold or we have a Clark Griswold in our life. But how do you help somebody like that? I mean, we're talking about like some of these stressors, self-imposed stresses, like the financial challenges, the desire to create the perfect Christmas, some of the family relationships that are kind of estranged or, you know, it's yeah. not all his fault, but he doesn't necessarily know how to respond to that. So if someone's coming to you and they have Clark Griswold tendencies or someone's just struggling with a lot of stress during the holidays, what are some things that you think that you could help out with for that person directly or for someone that they know?
Yeah, it might seem off book, but I would go back to self-worth. Because I think a lot of this flows out of self-worth work, which is like us compensating in different areas when we don't feel good about ourselves, more or less, right? In a yeah. nutshell. And so some of that, I think for him, is rooted in his family of origin, mm-hmm. right? And so getting that, and again, I think a lot of you know, like treatment modalities deal with this, like acceptance and commitments there, you know, commitment therapy is big about value work and big about, you know, different kind of, more or less like schemas, like things that we believe about ourselves and what gets in the way of joy, peace, happiness, contentment, all these things that we want during the holiday season and that all of us want for our families and stuff like that, right? And getting at that and also being able to live in line with your values, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, hey, if it's really important to have the big family Christmas and to do it well, great. How can we make that happen? What can we do to support if that doesn't happen, mm-hmm. right? What does that say about us? Like, are we still going to be okay if that doesn't work out, right? Mm-hmm. So I would start with kind of that self-worth piece for him. and explore what holidays mean, what family means, memories regarding this holiday, regarding times with family. You know, it's like anytime you're around family can just be evocative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even just the word family. It's like some people have a great association with that, and some people are like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, don't get me started, right? And so, you know, I think that ties in as well with kind of acceptance, right? Accepting ourselves, accepting the family around us, accepting circumstances and things that we can't change, right? Mm-hmm. And trying to change things that we can, right? We always talk about the serenity prayer, right? And we talk about that on a different different podcast, right? But I think that's where I would start, is kind of the self-worth for Clark, and kind of identify, okay, like, it seems like Christmas is a really loaded topic for you, and it seems like this is really significant. Seems like you really want to go out all out for this.
Mm.
That's great. Could we maybe dive into like what significance that plays for you, or what?
Yeah, that's
what
a great,
that looks like.
That's a great way to reflect on that. I like the idea of starting with his worth first. Like, what do you base your worth on? Is Christmas a big factor in that? And then I think, yeah, I like the idea of like looking at values, because sometimes without identifying them, we have these competing values. We might say that we value peace, but then the actions say, well, I spent all day long trying to make this perfect light display that almost destroyed my neighborhood.
Yeah,
and right, at the end, I was burnt out, angry, resentful, hurt because I fell off the roof, and now my neighbors hate me. None of that aligns, yeah, with peace. So is, yep, there something I could do that would create peace? And is this activity that I'm about to do going to compete with that? And when, right, you're intentional about identifying those values, I think that that can be a really powerful thing for the average person who's not necessarily thinking about things that way, right? We want,
right,
joy, peace, and happiness during the holidays, but we do all these things that counter those values and end up being stressed and overwhelmed and anxious as a result.
Yeah. And what happens when two values compete against each other,
mm-hmm,
right? So, hey, I want this great big family Christmas, and I care about kind of pleasing other people,
mm-hmm,
but I also value independence and doing things for myself and making decisions and all that kind of stuff. Okay, well, like, what wins out? Is it your people pleasing, or is it what you want?
Right.
And really parsing some of that out. Okay, yeah, I really care about, comfort. But then I also really care about us all being together and us being able to like choose for ourselves. Okay. Well, yeah, so maybe one person's like idea of comfort is different, right? Some people might want to just like lay low during the holidays. Some people travel for holidays, right? Some people, I mean, it's a whole mix of things, right? Family might be a really high value for somebody, and it might not for somebody else. And where this really comes in is a lot of times in couples work, right? Or like you've got two people, you know, hey, you and your wife have different values on something, right? Mm-hmm. I'll give an example. My wife is really big about kind of ecology, like really big about just like, you know, she works in water and resource management, right?
I'm glad you clarified. It made you sound like she works in the water, like she was like a scuba diver or like
she's actually working on Avatar 3 with James Cameron. I don't know if I told
you. She's just always in a submarine somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. Deep sea diving. She can hold her breath for 8 minutes.
Whoa.
No,
Tom Cruise levels right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, but like, so my wife cares a lot about ecology and honestly, kind of like we don't use a lot of like plastic, right? We do like, we store leftovers in glass and like all this kind of stuff because she just cares about the environmental impact. And, you know, I don't want to be ingesting stuff that I don't know what it is, like, mm-hmm, microfibers or this, or that, whatever, mm-hmm, stuff that's like way out of my wheelhouse. And I value convenience.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, what happens when you have convenience versus this value of like ecology? Hey,
right,
we're like, you know, we're pregnant, we're expecting. My wife wants to go cloth diapers. I'm like, that sounds really foul. I don't really want to be washing those out. I also respect the fact that you want to be doing something that is like good for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we can, let's reuse. And she's really big about that with like clothing, with food stuff. Like that's a very consistent ethic for her.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm like,
the convenience.
Right, what can we do that's convenient and, mm-hmm, like frees up other time and space and,
yeah,
is not stressful?
I'm going to withhold my opinions on that subject and just ask you how it's going. Once you go with the reuse.
Right now, what I heard is that people who often start on the cloth diaper track sometimes will change their opinions once they start to see what that really entails.
Yeah, and I might substitute the word sometimes to almost always.
Yeah, you
my might brother well and, right. and his wife start off the cloth for the same reason and eventually like, yeah. You know what, guys, we're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not for everybody. It's hard, it's messy, but if it goes back to what you said, values, right? So if I value this strong enough, then my actions will reflect it. And that's okay.
Yes. Like, and also, right, like I often do this with clients. Okay, so you know, like I have a list of, it's like 85 values to go through, right? There is no way that you can hold on to 85 values, even if they're all really good things, right? Hey, at a certain point, you know, fitness is going to run into convenience, right? Am I valuing convenience or am I valuing like my health and fitness, right? Like all these different things. Am I valuing family or am I valuing time for myself? Am I valuing, you know, hey, we want to be modest in this way, but like also we want to get something that's really nice and works and will last. Okay, so do you buy the expensive thing or do you buy the thing that's less expensive and more in your budget, right? All these kinds of things that conflict. They're all good things. It's just a level of, you know, so oftentimes when people disagree on things, what we end up doing is how, you know, and we, I think you guys have talked about this before on the podcast, but how big of a value is this to you, right? If you rank this 0 to 10, is this like a ride or die value for you?
Yeah.
Or is this like, it's like nice in theory. And if it works out, great. If not, I'm okay, right? Because oftentimes if it's like, you know, for my wife, the ecology thing is probably, you know, that's probably an 8 or 9 out of 10 for her, I imagine. And convenience for me is like, great, but like, can I be inconvenienced? Yeah, right. It's probably more in the 4 or 5 value. Right?
I want to know you keep me posted. Keep a little diary of the diaper inconveniences. The
diaper diaries?
Yeah, diaper diaries. And just let me let know how that goes. It gets messy. That's all I'll say. It gets
in more ways than one. Yes.
So many ways. But yes. I think that's a good exercise for people. Even if you don't have those values cards at home, people can go like, is this where the source of my conflict is coming from? Or do I have competing values in this decision or within my relationships or my extended family that are really causing the stress? And if I can think about it in that terms, like especially with gaining empathy for other people who we have difference of opinions with, like what value is at play beneath the surface that's driving this action? And what value of mine is it competing with to help resolve some of those conflicts? And I think that it's a subtle, small thing, and doesn't resolve, you know, some really intense family situations where there's trauma and a lot of hurt and stuff. But in conflict that's just based on personality and values, it can be really good insight. And you're like, why is there tension here? And I think we can kind of explain that. Man, this is a fun movie. And it's a really interesting case study of a father who has good intentions and also just struggles mightily with trying to keep up with the Joneses and his own kind of inner sense of worth. And so this was really fun. Anything before we wrap up that you wanted to cover that we didn't get a chance to connect on yet?
I mean, gosh, I just for a second just want to shout out, like, this movie, there are some movies that are like this that are just, you know, you've got the notable scenes, and this movie has several that are just absolute bangers. Like I forgot, I was jotting them down, and I legitimately have 6 different scenes that are like, I was trying to start off as just like, what is my favorite scene?
Yeah.
Driving to get the Christmas tree when they're at the mall and he's like looking at the lingerie. That's hilarious, right? Like staple gunning the lights on the outside of the house and then turning the lights on. Like, so good. When he's in the attic, right? Like watching, you know, the child, I wrote it down, Clark up in his attic watching his childhood family videos wearing a ridiculous outfit, which you described. Hilarious, right?
Why don't people cosplay as that at these big conventions? I want to cosplay as Clark Griswold in the attic. I'm going to see what I can piece together.
Could we make that work? Would that like fit with the Comic-Con crew?
Absolutely.
Like, hey, I'm Clark Griswold upstairs in his attic. When he's also, how long is he up there?
I don't know.
My wife and I were both wondering, because like, at one point, he's like yelling to the people downstairs, and then he just gives up when they can't hear. And then he starts like just making the best of it watching these videos. But I'm like, is that, I mean, are we talking like, you know, 3-6 hours? Are we talking, he's up there for a day and there's like, I don't know where dad is, whatever, right? Like, at what point? There are a lot of questions they have.
You know what part is so relatable as an adult now? It's the part where he steps through, he breaks through, lands on the bunk beds, and then his first thought is, warmth. And he cups his hands together and starts.
So good.
That's so good. Like, you know, I just put a hole in the attic roof. Whatever. My hands are cold.
Well, and at a certain point, you're just like, screw it. Like, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, it's just, this movie has so many of those moments. And then I was going to say the final thing was the Christmas dinner and toast. So the Pledge of Allegiance, eating the dried turkey.
The blessing.
That's it. It's so good.
Oh, I love
honestly,
it.
And I just, yeah, it. This movie, honestly, if you haven't revisited it, it's available on multiple streaming services. It is a clean, like, hour and a half, very quick. Like, sit down with somebody who you love and just let the hilarity ensue. And maybe there will be a thought-provoking conversation that comes out of it. Because that's what usually happens with me and my wife. I don't remember if I told you, when we went to go see Barbie, oh my gosh, the conversations that were had afterwards. Oh, after this movie. Like, even, like, funny movies,
yeah,
sometimes can really spark, like, an interesting discussion. Anyway, so.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know what's one of the most iconic things to me is actually the introductions of the song at the beginning.
Yeah.
The Christmas Vacation.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
I forgot about it. And it's, like, the animated, like, intro. Yeah. Yeah. Which also, in some ways, like, Elf has that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Da, 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 da.
Oh, I love
da,
that intro da, song. Da, da.
Yeah, and then it's got, like, the kind of cards and, yeah, the way it does it. And, yeah, there are a few things that kind of, like, evoke some of that, which is fun. It definitely fits with the spirit and kind of tone of this movie.
Yeah.
You know?
So good. I love Clark Griswold. He's another one of those, like, that would be an interesting client to have. Good situation, good movie, fun to revisit. I usually watch it multiple times each Christmas. It's
well,
it's
I was
a fun
gonna
one.
Say the fact that you love Planes, Trains, and Automobiles,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that you love this movie. I was gonna say, Del Griffith, Clark Griswold. That I was gonna
formidable
say
those, lineup.
Those two are those two have to be in the Rick Gutterson like starting five. Of like favorite characters, I would imagine.
Well, if you add Arnold Schwarzenegger from Jingle All the Way, they just said the triad of terror.
That's your front court right there. Power play, baby.
Oh my gosh.
Attacking the paint. had to throw in Shia just for Kayla.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this was so much fun, Michael. I loved talking about this movie with you. I'm so glad that you could come back on. Congratulations again to you and your wife and your growing family. I can't wait to check in on that more. And
thank
with
you so much.
That, we'll see you guys next time on Cinema Sessions.
All right. All right.
You're very good looking. I'm not attractive.